written these books on music and animals. The first one was Why Birds Sing, about music and birds. And afterwards, I said, next I want to do whales, because I knew that whale songs had been discovered in the 1950s and 60s, and that they influenced a lot of musicians, and that, you know, that could you actually go play live with whales? I hadn't heard too much about people doing that, so I figured I'm going to do that and write a book about it. So that was, I was researching that in 2006, and the book came out in 2008. So I would say since 2008, I've been trying to get National Geographic to do just this. Because National Geographic, as I described in my book in 1979, they published a sound page of a humpback whale song, which is like a record that you could pull out of a magazine and play on a turntable. That's called a sound page. And so National Geographic in 1979, which was maybe at the height of its influence, published in many, many languages. They all had this sound page, and they claimed to have printed 10 million of these at once. Okay, interesting. Well, it turns out that's the largest single pressing of any album of music ever. And so then I told him, look, you did this in 1979. What are you going to do now? I didn't get much traction on this until out of the blue last fall, I just got a call saying, we want to do this. So that's how it happened. And basically what it is, for those of you who don't have in front of you, is the humpback whale song. This is a whale that sings a song that takes about 15-20 minutes to sing, then it starts over again. It does it for up to 24 hours, just singing, 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 singing. And these humpback whales have a song that nobody knew about until the Navy was studying, the enemy, Russian submarines. They put hydrophones, underwater microphones, all across the oceans. And they wanted to hear secret stuff. And they heard a lot of secret stuff, but it turned out it was being made by marine mammals. As you could imagine, what's this coded communication? And they were a little disappointed to find out it was whales. But at least they said one thing. We can't let people find out about this. We have a secret now. It's a military secret, classified for like 10 or 15 years before we had these young scientists, Roger Payne and Scott McVeigh. They published this paper in Science magazine. All this is in my book, Thousand Mile Song, from 2008. And they said in that science paper, very interesting line, a humpback whale emits a series of surprisingly beautiful sounds. The scientist wrote that. And I called Scott McVeigh the other day. I called him up. He's 87 years old. I said, no one else has written, even to this day, something like that in a science paper. And he was pleased to hear it and pleased to see this geographic story, which all goes back to his analysis of this song. We had this issue, like, how do we make it look musical but not quite musical in a human way? But National Geographic really had this interesting idea, I thought, for them. We're going to convince our readership this is music if we mix this graphic notation of yours with regular musical notation. And I said, oh yeah, has musical notation ever appeared in National Geographic? And they said, that's an interesting question, because I'm not sure it's ever appeared, which would be amazing if you have musical notation in National Geographic, first time in history, for a whale song.
So it shows the musical notes, and then they're imposed with these colored, like, blobs, right, that represent the tones.
Technically, it's called pneumatic notation, which is a term from the first musical notation in Western culture looked like that, and it was done in churches in the medieval period to represent Gregorian chants. They're perfect for Tibetan overtone singing, as well as whales don't actually sing. They go, so it's not quite a steady tone. And that, you can say it's like, or you can represent its waviness. But I was very impressed that National Geographic said, we want the notation, we want the whale singing the notation, we want you on bass clarinet playing the whale part, and then we'll show people the whale is doing something like music. However, when I actually recorded it, given my natural tendencies not to play exactly the notes on the page, and if I'm playing with a whale, to interact with the whale rather than play the identical things, they said, no, you're bending it too much. You're interpreting it too much. Go straighter. Go straighter. And so literally I had to record this. This is the hardest part. Three times, straighter and straighter and more boring to really demonstrate this. And then the final version, literally someone the other day said, man, that whale sounds so much more like a bass clarinet than you.
I wanted to just ask you a little bit about being an artist and a scientist in the last year during COVID, and I know you tried some interesting experiments in outdoor performances and different things to overcome the pandemic stuff.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly strange and unique time. What do you do? It's been well remarked upon that performing artists are among the hardest hit by this crisis because they're just not allowed to do what they do. And I'm fortunate that I also have a job as a professor, so I can still teach. But you end up staring at the computer all day and talking to people and collaborating with people in different ways. I did 3 outdoor concerts in the fall in people's backyards with different groups, and that was quite fun, and I would do more. And now things are opening up more. There's going to be more events, but people are still scared of them. It's not like there's a rush to go and perform. But I did some unusual things, which is I collaborate a lot with people in different parts of the world, and we just made stuff together. And one thing I did is make this album we recorded online, like we're recording this, with Stephen Nachmanovich, who's a famous kind of thinker about improvisation, and he's a violinist, and he's written books on creativity. And I knew his work for many years, so I hadn't met him in person, but we decided, let's do this together. And then as we did the music, we realized that, music, big deal. Everyone's releasing music. It just comes out. You can't even buy or sell music. It just streams endlessly now. So let's do something else. Let's release a book to go with the music, like really long liner notes. We just talk about this improvised music. What were we doing? It's great. That's fun. And so then we recorded ourselves literally like 8-9 hours talking, and then automatically transcribed it. The computer transcription takes a few minutes, and then we edited it and turned it into this book, From This World, Another. It's like 104-page discussions about music and life and improvisation and writing. And then we met for the first time last week. I went down there to Virginia, just drove down there. And he hadn't seen anybody in a year, like outside his family. So it was really fun. And then otherwise, I've done some live performances, like online. One singer is in Sweden, a guy is playing Maori instruments in New Zealand, and I'm here, and we mix it together, and things like that. And playing live with Nightingales in Berlin. I'm going to do that again in the coming weeks. And then we stream the Nightingales to me. I'm playing along with them. And things like that, learning what makes something live, what makes it produced, the online connection between people.
Years back, you did a project on cicadas, right?
Yeah, cicadas are coming out this year, but not quite in our area. They're coming out in New Jersey and Maryland, and I plan to go there and play music with them to try and do things differently than I did last time. And what if I thought, now we can use drones flying through the cicadas, film them differently. We can record 3D audio with sort of like virtual reality techniques. And what's fascinating is how much bigger this story is now than in 2013. It has something to do with the pandemic, people desperate for something that's not political, and something that talks about recurrence and cycles. Like, the cicadas are coming back again. The world has not ended. There's some cyclical aspect to life. Nature gets more exciting and alive and beautiful if you hear it as something musical that you can join in with. These sounds are just right there around, and you just have to pay attention to them. It doesn't have to be like distant whales and rare bugs. Like tomorrow morning, I'm going to go out and play with the dawn chorus. Usually, I don't get up that early, but I'm ready. And you don't have to get up at dawn. There's birds singing whenever it gets to these warm days after rain. And you start to hear all these sounds, how they all fit together. It gets surprisingly interesting.
David Rothenberg's translations of humpback whale songs can be found in National Geographic's May issue on newsstands and at nationalgeographic.com. His music and writings can be found on Bandcamp and at terranovamusic.net. For Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.